Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vaibhava ki, Sri Harinand Chintamani ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Janitai go prema.
So tonight we'll continue with our course on how to improve your chanting, which is based on Sri Harinand Chintamani by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we had lesson one last Tuesday. So does anyone remember anything from last week?
Spiritual world is full of touchstones, Chintamani. Holy name, like when we chant the holy name, it fulfills all our desires. So we have to be careful when we are desiring. If we have material desire in our heart, Krishna fulfills that. So we should be very careful in desiring.
Hmm. Any other points?
The chanting of the holy name is both the means and the end of bhakti.
Any other points?
The chanting and the Lord is one, so the Lord manifests in the chant. The image of the Lord should appear in your heart. In your heart. Mm.
One gets a seed of fruit, but does not see the fruit.
Any other points?
Holy name is full of rasa, chanting. So we have to develop taste for chanting, which comes only by attentive chanting.
Good. Any other points?
You also saw the names of Krishna and the potential and Swarupa names and Tatastha names, family names.
Any other points?
So when you reach the level of Nishtha, then Lord Nityananda says you get the form of Krishna.
Good. Anything else?
Well, just a question. If we see the sacrifices done by Ravana and Hiranyakashipu, the austerities they have gone through. So for example, Hiranyakashipu, he dedicated so long, like 36,000 years. But he was was looking to get bendiction from Brahma. So my first question is why he didn't thought of Vishnu, but just because his brother was killed by Vishnu, so he wanted to go bypass Vishnu. The point is, can anybody worship Vishnu for malefied reasons as well?
For what?
For malefied reasons. Bad intentions.
Yeah. I can. I mean, a demoniac personality can.
But you don't see any examples.
Yeah, because generally the demoniac personalities gravitate towards, you know, Lord Shiva and those kind of personalities.
So the prerequisite to chant Lord Vishnu's name is you have to be in order of goodness.
It means that the text, the scriptures, which recommend one to worship Lord Vishnu are in the mind of goodness. Where the Shiva Purana and other places, which are considered to be Puranas, which are affected by the mode of ignorance, so then they will direct one towards that kind of worship. Does that answer your question?
So, in the beginning itself, it is decided that what a person is aspiring for. There is no question of transformation during the process. In the beginning itself, if you are not worshipping Vishnu, means you are starting it in the wrong way anyway.
So generally, someone will not accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or Vishnu as the Supreme Personality. So then, generally, they're demoniac by nature, so then generally they won't worship Vishnu or Krishna. They'll tend to worship Lord Shiva. You see the demons, like Vrikasura, and Ravana and those personalities, they worship Lord Shiva to become powerful. So. generally they'll gravitate towards that because they don't have respect for Vishnu or Krishna. So generally they won't go in that direction. Does that answer your question? Yeah, I understand your point. So I think it's something like that. Demoniac personalities. They're demoniac by nature, so then they won't see the Lord as supreme being. So because they won't see him like that, then they will not worship him in that way. Generally they'll go towards other. Plus it mentions that if you want to fulfill your material desires, then you worship Durga, you worship Shiva like that. So.
Like means just the Dhruva Maharaj, who was transformed during the process. Right, but he was not having any desire to
harm to others. But he wasn't demoniac at that point.
So I haven't seen any example that with malapad intention somebody started worshipping Vishnu.
Yeah, so generally it seems that that's not the worship that attracts the demoniac personalities. So. Any other points?
These are two points. One for Krishna and the HR of the market of the holy place. The amount of shraddha one can, by amount of shraddha one can purchase the holy name, the name of the holy name, and then the amount of nishtha one can develop that can purchase the form of the holy name.
Form of the Lord. Means the form of the Lord will come into the consciousness when one can. When you get to the level of Nishtha. Do you want a chair? We have enough chairs. There's chairs there, so we should turn. Any other points? So many chairs here, so.
We also saw three stages of chanting, and we went into detail about Namavas during the stage. We saw how Namavas and the four types of Namavas. And most of them are still Namavas, where you cannot approach Krishna prayer.
Any other points?
Primary and secondary means important primary and secondary names of the Lord. By meditating on the primary names, you can meditate on Guna and of the Lord. And the secondary names, they don't give the taste to.
They give liberation, but they do not give Krishna praise.
They don't give taste.
They don't give Krishna praise. Yeah, they give liberation, but they will not give prema. So one has to, if one wants prema, then one has to chant the primary names. Anything else? Okay. So everyone has the hands up, the handouts? You don't have to? Okay. That is there. There's enough. Still we have it. We have so many. Okay. Is that all of them?
Yes, well, I have three more.
Yeah, it should be. Well, I've printed about 30 or something. Okay, that's good. So if anyone else comes, then please give it to them. So tonight, we'll begin with the second part of the seminar on chanting, how to improve your chanting. So we discussed last week that what obstructs us in our chanting, Haridas Thakur mentions, is ignorance, which means avidya, and primarily offences. So it is because of one committing offences while chanting that obscures one's developing a pure taste for the holy name. So in the Harinam Chintamani, after the first three chapters of describing the glories of the holy name, then Haridas Thakur begins to describe in each chapter one of the ten offences. So it becomes very clear to us how to avoid the different types of offences whilst chanting. Because by committing offences while chanting, we block our ability to get a taste for the holy name. So therefore, it is very important to understand these offences. So tonight and tomorrow night we'll go through the ten offences. We'll understand them more deeply so that we can learn to avoid them in our chanting. Because by avoiding the ten offences, then one can develop a taste for chanting the holy name. So, we'll begin with the first offence. Haridas Thakur says, "I am very fearful of these offences. Please give me the strength to avoid them, my Lord." So, in order to advance in spiritual life, one must become fearful of committing offences. There are four types of offences. Nama aparad, jiva aparad, seva aparad, and Vaishnava aparad. There are four types of offences. So, in order to advance in Krishna consciousness, you must become fearful of committing offences. Because offences block our advancement in spiritual life. When we commit offences, we put a barrier between ourselves and Krishna. And by putting that barrier in between ourselves and Krishna, it stops us from receiving the mercy of Krishna. And when we do not get the mercy of Krishna, then we cannot chant purely. We cannot chant properly. And we do not develop a taste for chanting. So therefore, a devotee has to become very fearful of committing offences. He has to be very careful, very mindful, and continuously be aware not to commit the ten offences while chanting. Now the first offence is to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. So it says here that this offence completely disrupts one's spiritual life. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes this offence in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as the Hati Mata offence, which means the mad elephant offence. Because Mahaprabhu describes, he gives an example, that the Bhakti Lata is, our Bhakti is like a creeper. And Lord Chaitanya says the devotee is like a gardener. And we're attending very carefully the creeper of devotion to Krishna. So we very carefully mind this creeper of devotion to Krishna so that it grows very carefully. But if an elephant comes into the garden, it can destroy the creeper instantly. So this is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that when you criticize devotees, it is like a Hati Mata offence. It is like a mad elephant offence. Because it can destroy all of your devotion or your bhakti towards Krishna. It can completely disrupt it. So therefore it is considered to be a very serious offence to criticize the devotees of Krishna. So it says here, a sadhu has 26 qualities. So now we need to learn who is a devotee. So in order not to offend devotees, you must learn who is a devotee. So, Haridas Thakur says, a sadhu, or a devotee, a saintly person, has 26 qualities. Now, one is called the Swarup Lakshana, which means the essential quality, and the others are called Tatashta Lakshana, or ornamental qualities. So of the 26 qualities, which one is the most important?
Yeah, normally we would say humility. And humility is the second quality, it's called akrita droha, like that. But compassion is the first quality, it's called kripalu. Mercifulness, yeah, pridelessness. Yeah, they're all there. But which quality of all the qualities of the devotee is considered the most important?
Love for Krishna.
The love for Krishna? Yeah. It is called Krishnaika Sharana. Krishna Eka Sharana. Sharan means surrendered. Krishna Eka. To be surrendered to Krishna alone. This means, this is the principal quality, the most important quality of the devotee. Krishnaika Sharana, or to be surrendered to Krishna. From that quality, the other 25 qualities manifest. They are ornaments. It is like this is the crown jewel. This is the most important quality, the most attractive quality of the devotee. And because of that quality of being surrendered to Krishna, all other qualities manifest in the devotee's heart, in the devotee's consciousness. So therefore it is considered to be the most auspicious of all the qualities. Krishnaika Sharana, surrender only to Krishna, is the Swarup Lakshana. The external designations of Van Ashram are not the symptoms of Asatu. Only surrender to Krishna and attraction to the holy name. So, it is being described by Haridas Thakur that the external designations in Vana and Ashram are not the symptoms of Asatu. In other words, we don't just offer respect to someone because they're a sannyasi. Or we offer respect to the sannyasi, but we do not offer the other members of Vana and Ashram respect. Or, only if someone's in the renounced order of life, then we give them respect. Someone's brahmachari, someone is... No, that is superficial. Or someone is a brahmana, but I will not respect the shudra. Just like in some temples in India, they say the shudras cannot enter. Like that. So this is material designation. This is not saying the actual heart of the person or the bhakti. So therefore, the most important quality of the devotee is his surrender to Krishna. And by that quality, the devotee becomes recognized by Krishna and all the other qualities begin to manifest in the devotee's personality. So this is considered the actual quality of the devotee. One should not disrespect a sattu if the tatashta, or good qualities, are not present in his character. So there are so many qualities of the devotee. Humility, non-defiance, truthfulness, cleanliness, humility, mildness, gravity, sobriety. There are so many auspicious qualities that the devotee has manifest in his personality. But even if we see that the qualities are not so manifest, the devotee doesn't have so many good qualities, but still he's a devotee. Even there's so many faults in the personality, because of the previous conditioning, still, if the person is surrendered to Krishna, then we should consider that person to be a devotee, a saintly personality, and he should be given respect. He should not be disrespected. So we cannot disrespect someone based on some discrepancy. And we see, this person has some faults. There are some defects in the consciousness. So therefore, I will not respect this personality. But I will only respect the what I consider to be the very advanced devotees. Quite often you see this in the neophyte devotees. The Maharaj comes, the sannyasi comes, and they give so much respect. Which is correct. We should give so much respect to the Maharajas, to the sannyasis. But then you see the same devotees, they don't give very much respect at all, just to the general devotees. So much respect to one, but then so little respect to others. this is not pleasing to Krishna. I mean, it's pleasing to Krishna, but it's not considered to be very advanced consciousness. Whereas someone who is more advanced, he will offer great respect to the Maharajas, to the sannyasi, but he'll give great respect to the general devotees as well. He doesn't... he's not constantly thinking, well, I will only respect very senior, very advanced personalities, but I will not give respect or service to the general devotees. So, we see that if someone has this quality of being a devotee, he will give respect to all of the devotees. Not that he is simply picking and choosing. Which one is worthy of my respect? Which one is worthy of my service? Okay. Sattu Ninda includes criticism of caste, accidental fall down, last traces of previous sin, or sin prior to becoming a devotee. So this is called Sattu Ninda. Sattu Ninda means blaspheming the devotees. Sometimes devotees are blasphemed. Sometimes people criticize devotees. They say, because he's in a particular caste. They say, oh, this person is like this, or this person is like that. I've been to temples where the South Indian devotees don't speak to the North Indian devotees. And the North Indian devotees don't speak to the South Indian devotees.
Language barrier.
What's that?
Language barrier.
No, it's not language barrier, it's apparat. It is bodily concept of life. Thinking that one, it's just because of the material body, we are casting judgment. We think, oh, this devotee is from this place, this devotee is from this place. So I'll associate with these devotees, but I won't associate with those devotees. Like that. So this is bodily concept of life. It is not Krishna consciousness. So one should not be looking at the devotees simply because of their external. Also because of accidental fall down. Sometimes the devotees, they commit some mistake. Accidentally they have some difficulty in their spiritual life. So we see that some devotee struggles, has some difficulty, may even go away from the devotees for a short period of time, goes through difficulty, then comes back and is sincere and is repentant and continues to serve Krishna. We cannot continuously, every time there is some maybe like disagreement with the devotee, we say, oh, you did that. You went off and you did that in the past. 1 year ago you had some problems in your spiritual life. This is actually material consciousness. This is what the non-devotees do. Non-devotees are always looking for the faults. The devotees should be like the bee. The bee is looking for the honey. The fly is looking for the impurities. So the devotees should not be like a fly. We should not be looking for the negative qualities. We should be looking for the good qualities in others. And if we are always seeing the good qualities in others, then we will not commit offences to others. We don't have to worry that we are thinking, I will point out this fault of this devotee, I will point out that fault of that devotee. Krishna will rectify the devotees. You don't have to think it is your business to rectify all the devotees. Unless it is your position. Unless you are in a position of authority amongst the devotional community. And it is your duty to correct the devotees. Otherwise you don't have to look for faults and try to correct everyone. Krishna will purify the devotees in due course of time. So because of their caste, accidental fall down, last paste traces of previous sin or sin prior to becoming a devotee. So you can't say, well, just like before I became a devotee 20 years ago or so, I used to break their four regulative principles because I did not know any better. So most of the Western devotees like this, even many of the Indian devotees like this. So we can't say, well, they did this previously. So therefore they're not a saintly personality. We should not see because of what someone has done in their past, in their life before they became a devotee. We should not pass judgments and think, well, they did like that, they did like that. And in the mind, always thinking negative thoughts. Because the devotee, once they become a devotee, they're reinstated in their lost position. In their constitutional position as Krishna's servant. So we shouldn't be looking and thinking that previously they committed so many mistakes. So, A satsanga causes one to disrespect sadhus. So, what is one of the causes of why we disrespect devotees? A satsanga. Yeah, associating with materialists. Because what do materialists do? Right? They're always criticizing each other. Just look in the newspapers. So much criticism. No, this person did that. And this person did that. And they had this problem, they had that problem. It's very common. So when you associate with the materialist too much, you develop this material consciousness or this materialistic mentality. And you begin to criticize other devotees. But it is material consciousness actually. Because a devotee is not like that. A devotee does not have that type of consciousness. That he's always looking at the faults in others. The devotee is looking for the good qualities. So if you associate too much with the non-devotees, you can develop this tendency. So we have to be very careful about associating with the non-devotees too much. Because of their association, we can develop a critical mentality, which is against the life of devotion. Now it says, a satsanga is of two types. Being attached to women or men attached to women. So when one becomes too much attached to the opposite sex for the purpose of material enjoyment, that is called asatsanga. So either you associate too much with the opposite sex in a frivolous way or in a materialistic way, or you associate with members of the opposite sex who are too much attached to the opposite sex, and then you develop a materialistic mentality. And by that, asatsanga pollutes the consciousness, and then one becomes degraded. Just like you'll see in all the women's magazines, right? You'll see like Women's Weekly and New Idea and Clio and Cosmopolitan and so many magazines. And what is the consciousness? A lot of what is in there is simply looking for faults in others, basically. Thank you. So basically, a lot of what is in the materialistic association in the media is how to offend others, looking for faults in others. Right? And if we associate too much with that, that's why it is dangerous for devotees too much to read the magazines, too much to read the newspapers, too much to listen to the radio, too much to watch the television, because then you develop their consciousness. So a devotee must be careful of this kind of association. And number two, a satsanga is associating with mayavadis, pretenders, or atheists, pashandis. It means people who are against devotional service to Krishna. By associating with, even they say they are spiritualists, they say they are spiritual people, but actually they're not interested in devotion to Krishna, then what will be the result? The result will be we will also develop their kind of mentality of being envious towards Krishna. So if you become envious towards Krishna, you'll also become envious towards Krishna's devotees, and you'll become a fault finder. A devotee is the opposite. A devotee is always looking for the good in others. So then, there are three levels of devotees. The Kanishta, the Majjham, and the Uttama Adhikari. A Majjham Adhikari always serves the sadhus. So we should learn to offer respect to all devotees, no matter what level of advancement they are on. But we ourselves should become Majjhama Adhikari. Majjhama Adhikari means we should always be discriminating properly and learning how to see everyone in relationship to ourselves. We see Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? We see the advanced devotees and the spiritual master as objects of our service. We serve the senior devotees, we serve the spiritual master. With the devotees who are equal to us, we make friendship and we exchange the six loving exchanges. With devotees who are less advanced, then we be compassionate and we try to help them advance in their Krishna consciousness. And for someone who is innocent, we preach to them. For someone who is envious, then we try to avoid them. So they do not commit offences. Okay. So a devotee has to learn to discriminate in this way, not to see everyone equally, but see them according to their position and learn to respect them properly. In this way you will avoid offences. You commit offences when you do not follow these different etiquettes, or when you do not understand how to deal with others. You don't understand how to deal with the people who are superior or equal or junior. And when you don't understand how to deal with them, then you commit offences to them. And you become neglectful. I think so. You get a point? Yeah. Okay.
So, what is the attitude of a devotee to the materialistic people who are like, who might be senior to them in the job, position, or age?
Means?
A devotee's attitude towards non-devotees who are in a senior position to them, like a boss or a manager. Or
yeah, you should touch their feet. When you go to the office. Maybe so can emulate the desk and bring some prasad. You should be always respectful. Because even in the material world, these things are there. Someone is your senior in your workplace, you should offer respect. And it's a little complicated out there because everyone acts differently. They don't know how to act properly, and they will take advantage of others, and they don't always have good qualities. But in general, because we are devotees, then we should respect people accordingly. Like that. A devotee is, Prabhupada says, is a gentleman to everyone. A lady or a gentleman. So he always acts respectfully to all people. So you have to be careful you don't get taken advantage of, but at the same time then you have to offer proper respect. Any other points?
You just mentioned that we should avoid envious people. You're talking about non-devotees.
Someone is envious. Some of the non-devotees are innocent. In other words, you can preach to them. You can give them some Krishna consciousness, but some are envious, so they should be avoided. They commit offences towards Krishna and his devotees. So we have to learn who is innocent, who is envious. Any other points?
So, it's put down that one should not disrespect the sadhu if the status of the qualities are not present in the character. How do we understand that if Swarupa Lakshana is present, but the secondary qualities are not present? The secondary qualities have to follow the primary quality. The fact that one is completely surrendered to Krishna, because of that quality, all of the qualities should follow.
Yeah, but it means when someone's a neophyte devotee or a new devotee, sometimes they come from the material world, and they accept Krishna as the Supreme Lord, so they become surrendered to Krishna, which is the principal quality. But because of their negative association before they become devotees, it still takes time to develop the good qualities. So they don't always have such good qualities. Even amongst devotees, you know, we still have negative qualities. We don't have all good qualities. So it takes time to develop these good qualities.
Similar question, and Chandra Maharaj Mahasaya saying, if they are following bhakti, and this is the result of so much austerities and pious things that they did in the past, then why don't we have the level of appreciation for this? If you got something after too much pain, kind of hurt, and we were aspiring for this, now we got this, and why didn't we have natural taste for this? Then Maharaj said, the process of bhajan kriya is the biggest, the longest. And that's where the maximum work is done. So, you have to make a little bit more effort to come out of the bhajan kriya and go to the next level. If you're not, otherwise you will just keep rotating in the bhajan kriya only. You have that priority, yes, but it takes now a little bit extra from you to go to the next level after bhajan kriya.
Any other points? So, If we offend a sadhu, bhakti will leave us, and we will never develop a taste for chanting the holy name. So that is why we must be very careful about committing the offences, because when you commit the offences, you lose your taste for chanting. And when you lose your taste for chanting, then it's very difficult to become advanced in Krishna consciousness. So therefore, if you offend devotees, then this stops us from getting a taste. And if we don't get a taste, then we cannot advance nicely. So we must be very careful at all times not to offend anyone, especially the devotees. The degree of our offence is according to the level of advancement of the devotee we offend. So, if you offend Srila Prabhupada, or a pure devotee, your spiritual life, the reaction you get from Krishna will be very severe. If you offend a less advanced devotee, you may not get as severe a reaction. But still, if you commit a serious offence, even to a neophyte devotee, it can very seriously disrupt your devotional service. So you must be very careful. Don't think in your mind, this person is advanced, this person is not advanced. Just learn to offer respect to everyone, according to their position. So what is the remedy for this offence? If you commit this offence of blaspheming a devotee, one must fall down at the feet of the Vaishnava one has offended with tears in one's eyes and beg forgiveness. The Vaishnava, being very merciful, will embrace us and relieve us from this offence. So offences can be made in three ways, generally. Actually, there's six ways to offend a devotee, but three ways in general. Yeah, one is called vocal. It means you say words about a devotee. And this happens all the time. And you see devotees, they just say something about another devotee. They say, oh, she is like this, or he is like that, and commit some offence, make some judgment and offend another devotee. Then there is, in the mind, right, always thinking about other devotees, thinking, oh, this person is negative, they have these bad qualities. You're thinking it. Danger is, if you keep thinking it, it will come out in your speech. Right? If you keep thinking negative things towards devotees, you'll say negative things in due course of time. And then finally, there is corporal. Corporal means physical. It means actually physically attack a devotee. Generally, this does not happen so much, but if it does happen, it is very serious. That's the most serious offence. So, if we do offend a devotee, and we see the devotee is offended by us, then we should go and we should offer our obeisances, and we should beg forgiveness. Haridas Thakur says, with tears in the eyes, we should beg forgiveness from the devotee. And in this way, the devotee, being very compassionate, they will forgive us, embrace us, and then they'll relieve us of that offence. But you must, if you offend a devotee, then you must beg forgiveness from that devotee who you have offended. You learn in the Bhagavatam, in the pastime of Maharaj Ambarish, even when Devasa tried to beg forgiveness from Lord Vishnu, but he would not forgive him. He said the only person who can forgive you is Devasa, is Ambarish himself. So if you offend a devotee, it's only that devotee who can clear your offences.
Unintentional?
Yeah. So if you realize, even you didn't mean it, but somehow the devotee has been offended, then you must make it up. You must forgive.
When you don't know that you have offended, but you see that that person sort of has an indifference towards you, then what you do?
And you say, have I offended you? Not so difficult. You say, you know, Prabhu, have I done something to upset you? And the devotee says, well, actually, you did something, I think, so I'm very sorry. Actually, it happened yesterday. My brother, I said something. It was my brother's birthday yesterday. And then my other brother, then as I was leaving, I said something to my one brother, and then my other brother rang me later, and he said, why did you say that? And I said, oh, I didn't mean it like that. He said, yeah, I was upset that you said that. I said, oh, I didn't mean it like that. But it wasn't intentional. But sometimes we say something, but it must.
But what if that person doesn't provide you with an opportunity to say things?
To...
Then
Haridas Thakur says, then you should just keep chanting the holy name, sincerely.
and you should try to find opportunities to serve that devotee, to show them that you are sorry. And generally the devotees, if they have good qualities, they will forgive you. But if this devotee, for some reason, if they do not have that quality and they're not forgiving, then you just continue to chant the holy name of Krishna.
You don't know whether you're offended, whether we don't know, it's just because the other person is acting indifferent, you think, and then, but they don't tell you exactly. So what would you do?
The material world is a very strange place. So what to do? If you think about it too much, you probably have some mental problems. Now it is Kartik Mas, so we should just concentrate on going back to the spiritual world. Because there's no problems like that. Down here there's too many problems. It's too complicated down here. That's why at the moment I'm listening to my spiritual master's lectures on Vrindavan Mahimamrita by Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur. So Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur says, just go to Vrindavan and just go to some quiet place and just remain very quiet and obscure. And as you get older as a devotee, sometimes you think that's just the best way. Just keep to yourself, be very quiet, very humble, just do service to the other devotees, and just stay out of the politics and the difficulties. And because it quite often it just comes... After your kids get married, then you... Then you can go to Tirupati.
Thank you.
You have my blessings, Usha. Come and visit me in Vrindavan.
Once again, Father.
With your grandkids.
Even then, you ask me to get attached, isn't it?
Why not? At least they're devotees.
Nah, the kids get married, that's it.
Oh, God. That's not it. Okay. Second of
all. Prabhupada, one question.
Gotcha.
If somebody is not forgiving, or if you can't find them to ask for the forgiveness, so you said that we keep on chanting. Well, if we keep on chanting, can you still advance, or will that be...
No, because it means that the different things, because in Madhurya Kadambini it says that if you offend a devotee and you know you've offended the devotee, but because the devotee is so upset with you, they will not forgive you. Even you beg them and you say, but they're so angry because it was you made offense, then it is said at that point then you should keep serving them to try to appease them. But then if they will not forgive you, then you just take shelter of the holy name, and the holy name will forgive you in due course of time. If you're really sorry for what you've done, if you really are repentant and you feel bad for what you've done, then the holy name will forgive you in due course of time.
So basically we must be...
Yeah, you must feel, I mean, you feel bad. When we, in fact, well, just like yesterday, my brother rang me and he said, you know, he's upset with me. So then I felt very bad. So then I rang him back and I said, you know, I'm sorry and everything like that. So it means that if someone is upset with us, then we should try to rectify it.
And if you can't find them,
send them an email.
No, sometimes you can't find them.
Then, not, then what to do? Then just be very humble and just pray to Krishna. Yeah, because if Krishna knows that you are sorry, then Krishna will forgive you. Like that. If he knows you are really sorry, then Krishna will forgive you then. Like that. If you can't find the devotee, then.
But there are some offenses.
Yeah, that's what we're going through now.
Okay.
There's 9 other offenses. Second offense. To consider the names of demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma to be equal to or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu. So, this is a very, very big problem coming from people who are born in India. They think all the gods are one, same. Everyone is one. Everyone is equal. But
This is not Shastric. This is not Vedic. Right? It says here, Lord Krishna has 64 qualities. Lord Narayan has 60 of the 64, and the Jivas have up to 50 of the 64 qualities. So quite clearly, if you study the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami explains, everyone is not equal. Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma only have 55 of Krishna's qualities. The Jivas only have 50. Even Lord Narayan only has 60 of Krishna's 64 qualities. Right? There are qualities that Krishna has that not even Lord Narayan has. So how can you say that everyone is one? How can you say everyone is equal? Clearly they're not equal. Okay. The demigods are superior Jivas, but they are still servants of Vishnu. Ignorant people worship the demigods as equal to Vishnu. They stay in the material world forever. So, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, if you worship the demigods, you will go to the planet of the demigods. So it means you stay in the material world. The only way you can get out of this material world, Lord Shiva himself says, the only person who can give mukti is Krishna, is Narayan. Right? There's only God himself who can give mukti or liberation. Everyone else, you worship them, you'll just stay in this material world. Ignorant persons argue that because Lord Vishnu is all-pervading, he is in the demigods. Therefore, demigod worship is the same as worshipping Vishnu. This is not supported by scripture. So this is Mayavadi concoction. They say that God is everywhere, therefore he's in the demigods. So if you worship the demigod, you're worshipping God. And everyone is God. So you just worship everyone and then it's God. Now this is not Shastra. Yeah? It does not say in the Shastra that we are all God. We are part of God, but we are not God. Eko Bahonam, yeah? Means there's one person who satisfies the many. Yo Vidadati Kaman. Only one person can satisfy everyone else's desires. So it's not that everyone is equal. Nicho Nichanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam. Not everyone is equal. Okay. If we water the root of a tree, the leaves are nourished. If we water the leaves, the tree dies. So it's a very simple example given in the Shastra. That if you water the root of the tree, then the tree grows. So if you worship Lord Vishnu or Krishna, everyone becomes nourished and satisfied. But if you worship the demigods, like if you pour water on the leaves of the trees, the tree will not grow like that. So it is not that everything is one or equal. Because Kali Yuga is contaminated by impersonalism, people are inclined to demigod worship. It's very popular these days. People say everything is one. You just worship everyone or anyone and you'll get the same result because everything is one. And all paths are one. And we are all one. And we'll all go to the one. So just worship the one. It is concocted. In Kali Yuga is very common. People say like this. Chanting with this offense can only award liberation, but never Krishna Prema. We should never accept prasad offered to the demigods by Mayavadis. So we don't accept demigod prasad. Right? Because the demigods themselves, they offer the bhoga to Krishna, to Lord Narayan, to Vishnu. They themselves don't accept the offering themselves. So someone who worships directly to them and then distributes that prasad, then that is actually an offense. Because the demigods themselves don't do like that. The demigods don't take an offering and just eat it, the bhoga. No, they take the offering and they offer it to the Supreme Lord. Then they take the prasad. Just like if you go to Nandagram in Vrindavan, where Krishna lived and grew up, then every day they offer the bhoga to Krishna Balaram, and they take the remnants and they offer them to Lord Shiva. And then everyone is given the prasad. So we take the remnants of Lord Shiva, but the remnants of Lord Shiva are Krishna's prasad. That is the correct system. We offer to Krishna, and then the remnants we offer to the demigods, we offer to Lord Shiva, we offer to the Guru Parampara, we offer to our spiritual master, then we distribute to the Vaishnavas. That is the system. Not that we just offer to anyone and it's all the same. This offense is caused by envy. It can be cleared away by pure devotees. To dissolve this offense, one must repent intensely and chant the holy name, meditating on Lord Krishna. So if you commit this offense, then you must see offense number one and offense number three, which is to blaspheme the devotees or to blaspheme the guru. To rectify that offense, you must go to the guru or the devotee who you have offended and beg forgiveness. But the other offenses, they are destroyed by knowledge. When you have proper knowledge, then those offenses are cleared. So it means you go to the devotees explain things to you properly, you beg their forgiveness for having the wrong conception or idea, thinking that Krishna is one with the demigods. The devotees explain this to you, you understand it properly now. You beg their forgiveness for having this wrong conception, then the offense is cleared. So by jnana, divya jnana or transcendental knowledge, you destroy these offenses. So, third offense.
Where does envy come into it? Ignorance is okay, but how do you say it's envy?
Because ultimately we don't worship Krishna because of envy. So when we give respect to so many other people but not Krishna, that is because of envy. Ultimately. So we offer respect to the demigods, but then why not offer respect to Krishna? Because we see in the Bhagavatam the demigods are worshipping Krishna. So then what is our problem with Krishna or with Narayan? Right? It's because of envy. So the demigod worship, if they were not surrendered to the Supreme Lord, it is because of envy in the heart. Yeah, it could be that, but then if it's explained to them properly, then they should understand. Just like in the Bhagavatam, it explains that even Lord Shiva, then he is defeated by Krishna, he is saved by Krishna. In the 10th canto, there are different pastimes where Krishna, and in the 4th canto, we see that he worships Krishna. Like that. So if one sees all these things and he doesn't surrender, then he is envious.
One thing,
Because that's not the system that we're taught. The system is we offer to Krishna and Balaram on behalf of the spiritual master or with the permission of the spiritual master, and then the prasad, which has been accepted by Krishna, is distributed to the demigods. That's the system. So don't worry about the mic.
I mean, sometimes, mostly they are my brothers. So,
so don't associate with them.
But what if they need the Krishna?
Why are you accepting them?
What if they say no, we don't?
Why are you in their house?
Well, you can't just tell them.
No, you associate with devotees.
Yeah, I know.
What do you mean, like family members or something?
Well, mostly, I mean, they are my devotees.
But there's none in this room?
But we can't just associate with people in this room. We have got to associate with
us. But there's so many people in this temple. Why do you need to go and associate so much with the Mayavadis? If they're cooking an offering to the demigods, not to Krishna, we should not take that offering.
So we should just say that no, we don't
want it. Yeah, we say we do not want it. We just say to them, I only eat Krishna prasad.
Okay.
I would not eat what they cook in the Mayavadis, offer to the demigods. I say, no, that's not my. You know, I'm a Vaishnava. You know, I'm aspiring to be a Vaishnava. I don't take demigod prasad.
In India, you know, people so ignorant.
they don't even offer to anybody.
That is their problem, but why do you have to go and eat their, well, what they're cooking?
How can they avoid visiting them?
Then just avoid it. And bring your tiffin. There's ways to do it.
Thank you.
You have to be determined.
So, one of the angles of bhakti, this is described in the matter of illusions, that one should be respectful to the demigods. So, if a prasad is offered to the demigods, comes from there. So what is the real etiquette? What is the real etiquette?
What is the
real etiquette?
No, it means that, as we said, like in Nandagram, they offer to Lord Shiva, but after they offer to Krishna Balaram. But if it's directly offered to the devotees, then we do not accept it. Because that is not the Vedic system. That's not disrespecting the demigods. Because the demigods are feeling disrespected by the person who's doing the offering. So it's not that we are wrong in that case. It's the person who's doing the offering is wrong. Does it make sense? So there's no defect on our side. That's not if someone directly offers to Lord Shiva and then gives you the offering which is directly offered to Lord Shiva and you don't accept it, you haven't offended Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is offended by the person who is offering to him incorrectly. Because Lord Shiva doesn't want the bhoga. Lord Shiva wants prasad. He's the devotee.
But what they are saying is that the worship of Lord Shiva is completely sanctioned by those tamasic puranas. Which actually, describe the ways to worship Lord Shiva and basically offer, and they are following those intentions.
Yeah, so therefore, Srila Vyasadeva, his final writing was the Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, we follow the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is said to be the cream of the Vedic liturgies. Third offence, to disobey the orders of the spiritual master or to consider him a mundane personality. The human birth is rare. It must be used for self-realization. In any science, one needs a guru. An intelligent person must find a guru. The guru must be self-realized and fully proficient in spiritual knowledge. He must be able to give Krishna prema. So this is the qualification of the guru. He must be able to deliver you Krishna prema. If he cannot deliver Krishna prema, then he is not considered to be the acharya or the guru, the spiritual master. Like that. So, you see, particularly in India, there are so many gurus, but this is the qualification. Can they give Krishna prema? Can they give love for Krishna? Can they deliver you Krishna? If they are not doing that, then they are not considered to be spiritual master or guru. So. A disciple must approach with humility and service and take initiation. Diksha and Shiksha gurus must be respected equally. This is the key to spiritual success. Guru must be in disciplic succession and must strictly follow the teachings of the founder, Acharya. So, Diksha and Shiksha gurus must be offered equal respect. Now, this is the system, right? If someone is the Shiksha Guru or the Diksha Guru, then we should offer them equal respect. And this is how we advance in spiritual life. It says here that the Guru must be following the Samstaka Acharya. Samstaka Acharya means the founder Acharya. The founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, all the Gurus in ISKCON must represent with fidelity or with strictness the teachings of Prabhupada. If they deviate from Prabhupada's teachings, they are not considered to be guru. Anyone in ISKCON must follow Prabhupada's teachings correctly and accurately. If someone begins to teach something which is not what Prabhupada has taught, they are not considered to be an authorized guru in ISKCON. So this is the qualification of the spiritual master. He must perfectly represent Srila Prabhupada. Right. Prabhupada said, do not change anything. The guru must not be judged as an ordinary mortal. He is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. The relationship between guru and disciple is eternal. Before chanting, one should remember guru, one's guru and his instructions. So it says, in this offense, one should not disobey the guru or consider him to be an ordinary person. Right? When you see the guru as an ordinary person, you will disobey his instructions or you'll take them for granted. Now sometimes devotees, they see the spiritual master as an ordinary person because of too much familiar association. So we must be very careful that it says one should not get too close to the fire or too far away from the fire. If you get too close to the fire, you'll be burnt. If you get too far away from the fire, right, you will not get the benefit of the fire. Similarly, when dealing with the guru, you should not come too close to the guru or too far away from the guru. So you should serve the spiritual master, but not come too close, too familiar, and not stay too far away, so you don't get any benefit. So that way you will always remain respectful to the guru. Never see the guru as an ordinary personality. Right? Because the spiritual master is not ordinary. No? He is a liberated personality. He is a transcendental personality. But then sometimes you may think the guru is like myself because of becoming familiar, and that we may commit offences, or we may become too familiar in our dealings with the guru. Right? And that is not appropriate. So, before chanting, one should remember one's guru and his instructions. So before we begin to chant, then we should meditate on our relationship with the spiritual master and his instructions. And in this way, we begin our chanting. Right? Understanding our relationship as a personal servant of the spiritual master. That is the meditation of the disciple. He worships Krishna thinking that I am the assistant of the guru. He chants the holy name thinking I am the servant of the spiritual master. And this way we become accepted by Krishna. Guru, Krishna and Vaishnavas must be worshipped equally. Undeviating faith in guru leads to Krishna praying. Guru and disciple must test each other before initiation. So, the guru, the Krishna and Vaishnavas should be worshipped equally. We should worship the guru as we worship Krishna, with the same level of respect. Right? And the guru and the disciple must test each other before initiation. So before getting initiated, the guru will test the disciple. Is the disciple sincere? Right? And the disciple must study the spiritual master. Study the way the spiritual master speaks to others and how he acts with others. And we'll see the quality of the spiritual master by seeing how he relates with other devotees. With anyone. And by seeing how he relates, we'll understand his position. That he is a transcendental personality. And he will test us to see if we are actually sincere. And when he feels satisfied, then he will offer us diksha, or initiation. No, it means the relationship with the guru is eternal. It means you will have a relationship in the spiritual world as the assistant.
As the same person?
Meaning?
One has a guru.
It means your spiritual master is Burujan Prabhu.
Yes.
So it means when you go to Goloka Vrindavan and you're serving Radha and Krishna, will you be serving under Burujan Prabhu?
Yes.
Yes. The relationship is eternal. Prabhupada said there will be another ISKCON in the spiritual world. So you have to learn to get along with each other. Because if you can't get along here, you won't get along up there either. And if you don't get along up there, then you'll be asked to come back here again. So you have to learn to get along here first. Then you can go. So. No, because then you get a new guru.
like one guru leaves and then you take shadow of another person, so that relationship is eternal.
Okay.
So
the first one was not eternal.
Just leave that to Krishna. What's the difference? That person is going to be there as well, and you probably end up serving that person as well in the liberated state. What takes place down here is only like, goes like that. Our whole life is like that. So someone leaves and someone comes, and by the time you get back, everyone will be liberated, everyone will be perfect, and you know. So.
Lord Krishna, he can, if he wants to send somebody to Bodhi from the spiritual world in the media world for preaching of, you know, how he sent to Srila Prabhupada, then what happens? He is here, and all the devotees which he had before, they will be in the spiritual world, or they will all come together with him.
With Prabhupada?
You know how he was empowered, right?
Yeah.
So Lord Krishna empowered him and sent him to this material world for preaching.
Mm.
So when he was there with Lord Krishna, he must be having lots of devotees there. So does it mean they all came together with him there?
Maybe some did, but it's not so much told or mentioned.
Or some of the devotees come with him in some.
It means that Lord Chaitanya says that he sends his intimate associates. So as for who is who and who is who, we may not be sure, but it doesn't matter so much.
Okay.
I don't know the answer, so I can't give an answer. Mm-hmm.
If spiritual master goes to the spiritual world, are we sure that even the disciple goes with him, like when he does?
If you follow. If you don't follow anything, you won't go anywhere. But if you follow what your spiritual master has taught you, you'll go back to Godhead.
Thank you.
It's not automatic. You have to follow.
Who should be considered as a shiksha
guru? Shiksha guru means someone who gives you instructions which helps you develop faith in your diksha guru. Like that. It means. See, sometimes devotees say, this person is my guru, this person is my guru, this person is my guru, this person, but it doesn't mean like that. It means guru is your diksha guru, and then those who you see on that platform, they are shiksha gurus. So you should offer respect. This, it means you have to offer the same respect. So you can't just say, you know, this person is my diksha guru, this person is my shiksha guru, this is my shiksha guru, but then you don't offer the same respect. Like that. So it should not be that you just think everyone is like that. There is guru, sadhu, and shastra. So many sadhus will help you advance in spiritual life. But to call someone your shiksha guru means you have to give them the same respect as your diksha guru. So if you're not willing to do that, then don't call them the shiksha guru.
There are two things, though. You said that the relationship between the guru and the disciple is eternal. Now, the spiritual master goes to the spiritual world. But then if the devotee, his devotee is not 100% or 70%, then he won't go there. But Lord Krishna said that devotional service, if you do, it never gets lost, never vanishes. If you have done 1%, then next life you start with. And from 2%. So, I mean, what happens in the spiritual master is in the spiritual world, and that disciple who is not advanced, he is coming back again and again. So, who is guiding? So, what is the relationship?
That's when it says that the guru is one. Because there's so many spiritual masters. And you'll take shelter of someone, and they will help you go back to the spiritual world. And when you get back to the spiritual world, you have a relationship with both people, so there's no loss.
So, what is the meaning of eternal then?
Eternal means when you get back to the spiritual world, you'll have your relationship. You might have a relationship with more than one person, so.
Okay.
You might have more than one person. And getting back to the spiritual world, you'll serve so many devotees, so there's no problem.
I can't understand when you're eternal then.
Eternal means when you get back to the spiritual world, you'll be serving Jagataka Swami, so that's eternal.
But if I'm not up to the point, then I'll have to come back.
Then you'll serve Jagataka Swami and you'll serve the other people who help you also. What's the problem? It just means you'll have more people to serve. So.
But what if there are people I'll serve in my next life?
They'll be there as well.
They are not in the disciples of Jagataka Swami.
Don't worry about it. Just go back to the spiritual world and let Krishna work it all out.
That's a very big thing for me. That's why I'm inviting.
Krishna is a very big person. You think he can't take care of your problems?
Oh, he can.
So then why are you worried?
But the thing, it depends on me.
Why don't you just get back there and then let him work it all out?
Well, it is the problem.
Okay. And then when we get back there, I'll walk up to you one day and I'll say, see?
If I go there.
You'll be there soon.
Then I would recommend Dr. Krishna. He was a very good guru.
I mean,
he taught us so many
times.
So you must
call
him.
By your mercy, then. Thank you. By your kind words, then we can also. One who offends one's guru is expelled from the path of bhakti and attains the sat sangha. So when you offend the spiritual master, what takes place? Right, you block your relationship with Krishna, you lose your taste for chanting, and then you will only associate with non-devotees. So the first offense and the third offense are connected. If you blaspheme devotees, you will stop getting the mercy of Krishna, and then you will stop following the instruction of the spiritual master. So you'll commit the third offense and the first offense. If you stop following the instruction of the spiritual master, right, you will lose your taste for chanting, and then you'll begin to blaspheme devotees. Right? So both offences are connected. Right? The remedy is, one must give up the bad association and repent bitterly. Out of his merciful nature, the guru will surely be forgiving. So if you offend the spiritual master, you must go to him, you must speak for his forgiveness, and he will kindly forgive you. Fourth offence. You blaspheme the Vedic literature or literature in pursuance of the Vedic version. Shastra emanates from Krishna's lips. It is fully transcendental. It can only be understood by Krishna's mercy through parampara. Humans have four defects, but the Vedas are perfect. The Vedas reject karma and jnana. Their conclusion is bhakti. The Vedas describe sambandha, abhideya and prayojana jnana. By chanting the holy name, a devotee realizes all three types of knowledge. To interpret shastra is a heinous offense. Mayavadis are aparadis. They destroy the natural devotional mood of the Vedas. So actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Mayavad philosophy is demoniac. It is not Vedic. To think that everything is one, that is not Vedic. Vedic teaches duality. Achincha Veda, Veda Tattva. Oneness and difference. Okay. So to have a Mayavadi understanding is not Vedic. It is an offence to the Vedas to think in a Mayavad way. Okay. The Vedas teach Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana Jnana. These things need to be understood through the Srimad Bhagavatam and through the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then one will understand the Vedas properly. The Vedas glorify Om and the holy name from beginning to the end. The remedy. If one commits the offence, he must glorify and worship the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam will forgive the offender. So if you blaspheme the Vedic literature, if you study the Bhagavatam and you think something in the Bhagavatam is too extraordinary to be true, then that is an offence. So, if you commit this offense, it says you must worship the Bhagavatam. It says you must offer an aarti to the Bhagavatam. You must grind chandan. And with chandan and tulsi, you must offer that to the Bhagavatam. Okay? And you must clear your mind of any thinking that what is in the Bhagavatam cannot be true. Especially next year, if Krishna allows us, if we study the fifth canto, it says the fifth canto is a test in the Bhagavatam. Because there are many things in the fifth canto which are very extraordinary and will test your faith. Like that. So then you'll see. Right? But if one doubts what is in the Bhagavatam, and if one commits this offense, then one must clear this offense by clearing one's doubts, by revealing his heart to the devotee, by getting the doubts cleared, and then by worshipping the Bhagavatam, then one is forgiven of this offense. So tomorrow night we'll continue with the next six offenses, and then that will be it for this year, 2018. We'll answer it after the class. Okay. So then, I'm planning to go to India, not this Friday, but the following Friday. So I'll probably come on the Thursday night to the temple, the night before I go. So otherwise, tomorrow night will be the last time that we'll see each other for this year, probably. So thank you very much for all of your association this year. There'll be one more class tomorrow night, and then next year we'll pray to Giri Raj that we can continue the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. If anyone needs to pay their fees, then you can pay them by tonight or tomorrow night. And do you have the oral presentation? You have them? Like that? Tomorrow I will give back anyone who's done their exams for this section, then tomorrow night I'll give back your exams. Like that. Srila Prabhupada ki.